this morning because it was raining where I was, but this afternoon was beautiful. In any event, we're going to have a beautiful weekend. Let me just tell you what the temperature is. We kind of got the weather up. Tonight, mostly clear, about 35 degrees. By tomorrow,
with your hand.
Okay.
Sunny, high of about 54 degrees. And by Sunday, again, it's becoming sunny after mostly cloudy Saturday night. And into Monday, again sunny, a high of about 47 degrees. So, folks, it's great out there. And Bill will tell you after the end to get up off that couch. But I guess that's true because there's not going to be a lot of sports on. At least you're not going to be able to go to the sporting events. And I don't know if it's going to be the same to watch sporting events with no crowds. So in any event, Bill is going to introduce our guest, who we're very happy today. And he's, is that good wind or good wing?
That's Goldwing.
Goldwing.
That's a model of a Honda motorcycle.
I know it is.
Okay.
I know it is. In fact, my brother had a Goldwing.
Ah, cool.
So in any event, Bill.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It's the Sports Guys. I'm Bill Wolfson. I've got with me Pat Smits, who's our Green Bay Packer fan. But it's a good thing the football season's over, or else you'd be sitting shiva, I suppose. But we have with us today a guest. Our guest today is Mo Poston, owner of Berger's Motorcycle Shop up in Three Bridges on Route 202. Good afternoon, Mo. How you doing?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Pat. How are you?
Well, you must be really happy with the weather.
Oh, this is perfect. Doesn't get any better than this.
And everybody's getting their bikes tuned up. And
this is when it happens.
So, go ahead, Bill.
Okay, well, Pat, you know, we have a very serious problem in this country, a state of national emergency now. For the past hour, the president's declared it. And they're advocating social isolation. And I can't think of a better way to be social and isolated than on the road, on a motorcycle, cruising along on one of Hunterdon County's scenic roads. Mo, what do you think about that?
I think you're spot on the money there, Bill.
That's great.
The nice thing about that also is that when you're on those things instead of your car, all of these worries of this kind of stuff just go away because you have to concentrate on riding the thing instead of just sitting there steering.
You're right.
So
especially in Hunterdon County, you really have to concentrate.
You do.
I mean, I stopped riding a bike years ago. I guess I still have my license.
Good.
Motorcycle license.
Good.
But I thought, as a mom with young kids, it was just too dangerous.
Okay.
And so I don't know. Do you think that motorists are better today? Do they really look? I know that. People who ride bikes are very careful, and they're defensive drivers to the utmost.
I don't think they're better drivers, Pat. I think they're a lot worse. I think if a person is into the motorcycles, you're going to just tune yourself up and be cautious. I constantly look at the eyes of the drivers coming at me. But it's something that if you want to do, I'm not going to let it hold me back from doing it.
No, I agree.
It's enjoyable.
But the one thing that always was so amazing to me was that people who were parked, if I was going down the main road, had the right of way, people at stop signs just didn't see you.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there were times where they were parked and you had to be very careful because all of a sudden you thought they saw you, but they pulled right out in front of
right.
you.
Right. So you have to be very defensive.
Anyway, I didn't mean to start the program that way.
That's okay.
But
that's okay.
We'll move right along. Well, what kind of bikes do you sell?
I have my main bike. My main line is Honda. I've had them since 1969, and we picked up Suzuki motorcycles and ATVs in 1980. So 40 years with them, 50 years with Honda, and we have a line called Kymco, which isn't quite as well known, but they make a lot of machines for other brands. They make a lot of Honda scooters for about the last 35 years. They've been around since 1963 in Taiwan, and they make a lot of BMW. Their scooter and some of their motorcycle engines and Kawasaki stuff and Articats. So.
Yeah. Mo, I wanted to ask, how do you fit a person to a bike? Somebody who wants to get into the sport, hasn't ridden before. I know you're going to want to get them to go take some lessons, but how do you start the newbie off?
Usually they have some sort of directions. I kind of do a little thumbnail of the models and the styles, you know, that are available to them. And you kind of get an idea of their background. So if they're a newbie, we do suggest that you take one of those great rider ed courses. We've supported them for 35 years now or better. But at the end of the day, once you let them sit on all these models and that you think that they can handle without overloading them, they kind of will tell themselves, this one feels good, this one's a little too heavy, I like the handlebars on this one. The problems we do run into sometimes with this, if you have the expert that came along with them and they're going to skip all of these safe models that these people could handle and put them on something a little too large or too powerful for an entry level. That's the problem, because now you're dealing with somebody who's an expert and you don't know anything, and then it becomes you get a little bogged down.
Well, and if I can interrupt.
As you often do.
I so often do. One of the things that I found, and I'm fairly slim, and I had to get a bike that didn't tip over on me when I stopped,
right.
Honestly. I mean, that was, to me, I could see immediately when I tried a bike that was too heavy.
Right.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, we're seeing more and more women getting into the sport.
We are,
and
definitely.
They don't seem to, they may not have the same upper body strength as some men. So, Mo, how do you fit a woman who wants to get into the sport or continue with the sport?
Don't bring an expert. Don't bring some guy.
Don't bring your husband.
That's exactly.
Don't bring some guy who thinks you can, you know, deal with a big. Yeah. And my brother had a Goldwing.
Right.
You know,
and that's what happens. The guys that are bringing in their wives, and maybe they're a little, you know, now they've got the money to afford these toys and like that, but they forget that in 1968 or 69, they started out on a Honda 250 or
right.
350. Now they've got a Goldwing or an Ultra Classic, and you're standing there shaking to pieces because they want to start you on 1100 cc or something that's 700 pounds. So that's where it's much better off. The women are a lot more intelligent getting into the sport because they don't have the egos. So you can usually, if they're by themselves, you can advise them and let them sit on things and tell them what you think. A lot of times, again, I'm going back to sometimes the husband as the expert.
Or the
boyfriend who's an expert. Oh, honey, you're going to get past that in a year. Yeah, but you're still going to be okay and at 100% because you started out with something you could handle.
Right. And
so take it in two steps.
And if you start out with something you handle, then you use it.
You do.
And then
you look forward.
Maybe. Now, I had a Honda.
Mm-hmm.
But I never went any bigger. And, in fact, as I said, I started to worry
sure.
About the fact that, you know, I had little kids.
Right.
The other thing, of course, and I'm so glad that in New Jersey we have the helmet laws.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry, yeah. But
me
I've
too.
Seen, and I've been all
well,
over
me
the country,
too. Me
seen
too.
Too many people that, you know, it's just
yep.
unbelievable
yep.
to me that somebody would risk
yep.
An accident on a motorcycle without a helmet.
I haven't ridden without a helmet in at least probably close to 50 years. And my friend from Colorado, Mike Quigley, he was a local Flemingtonian here, and he and I ride every year. We'll do a 4,000 to 5,000 mile ride. One year I go to Denver, next year he comes here. So this
do you ever
year,
go to Sturgis?
I'm not into. I have Pat, but after a pheasant hunting trip out there in November, I'm not into the crowds. I'd rather take my fly pole and take two or three other guys and go to a lake or something and go fly fishing. I just didn't get into the. All
Mo,
the big deals.
Mo, I wanted to talk a little bit about getting outfitted to ride. What are the things that you think are necessary besides the helmet? What do you need to wear?
Well, you're always going to have the – you definitely want the hand protection, the gloves. I personally wear over-the-ankle boots. I wear long
right.
– they do make the proper gear as far as the pants and stuff like that. I do wear blue jeans mainly unless I'm on my long trips, and I do wear a motorcycle jacket. And the difference now is all of these new clothing that's been out for 20 years is much superior to the leather we had years ago.
Oh, I remember leathers when I rode a bike and I had a Honda 305.
Yep.
The leathers saved me a lot of trouble and a lot of pain.
Absolutely. I still have the leathers and I do use them.
I still have an old leather jacket
that
every once in a while I'll wear and people kind of look at me like, ooh.
I have all mine. That what's nice now is on these extended trips, you have heated underliners. Like under my jacket, I wear a shirt and a heated liner, and that plugs into the motorcycle. And then you plug your gloves into the sleeves of the heated liner. This is underneath your jacket. And I have an older set, so mine has two rheostats, one for the liner, one for the new ones. It's all remote. You can put it in your pocket, click it up, click it down, but I don't have to layer up anymore. So I don't have to carry all those clothes with me to Colorado or Montana or whatever.
So, Mo, do you keep those clothing in stock? You keep stuff like that in stock?
Yes. Yep.
That's great.
Go
yeah.
ahead, Pat.
No, I was just saying, and it, you know, sometimes I can barely walk. If it was cold and
sure.
it was really layered, it was kind of like, Bill, you could recognize this one, kind of like going to Lambeau Field when it's below zero and you have to wear layers.
Right.
But, you know, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
I think anybody with motorcycle gear, they'd be perfect.
Absolutely. Well, now, Pat, you can get everything in battery.
Right.
I hook it into my motorcycle battery. But now they have rechargeable batteries for football stadiums, sporting these guys that are outside carpenters. Milwaukee makes all this stuff.
Right.
So there's a bunch of brands now.
Yeah. Mo, I wanted to talk about some of the trips. You know, we were talking a little while ago. I'm a big believer in back roads and backwaters. And what William Least Heap Moon, one of my favorite authors, called the Blue Highway, when he went across the country with his dog on all the back roads.
Right.
And you can really have some adventures. But you recently had an adventure in Baja California.
I did.
You flew out to, I think,
San Diego. Yeah.
How'd you arrange this trip?
Well, I have a customer. I have some customer friends that have done this, and the one fellow, Paul's done it for about 9 years, and he kept coming back with all these super tales. And for years I wanted to do it. I just one of those things. I didn't take the time to do it. So I said, you know what? I got to get this done. I was 69 years old last year, and I said, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. So my cousin-in-law, I talked him into it. He's in Utah, and we flew to San Diego. They pick you up, take you to Ensenada. And to make it a long story short,
Ensenada's in Mexico, isn't it?
Ensenada's in Mexico. It's about 100 miles south of San Diego. So, and then the next 3 days, you're on off-road motorcycles. So you're in the desert in 400 miles. We did 160 miles the first day, 120 the next two, and you stay in a different place the night you're out there.
But so where did you stay? Were you along the coast?
We went from Ensenada to the Bay of Cortez side, and we stayed in a town called San Felipe in a hotel. And these people have done this for 30 years.
Right.
It's well oiled. And then the next day, you stay up in what I call the high desert, and this it's called Mike's Sky Ranch. And all of this stuff is on the Baja 1000 race course. And this place is so far in there, you're only going to get in there with a Jeep or an off-road motorcycle, and it's run with a big diesel generator. It's got a pool. It's, you know, it's a destination for people that want to get out of the main deal. And then the third day, you're 120 miles back to Ensenada, and then they take you back to San Diego.
So you don't go to some place like Rosarito?
I don't know what that is.
Well, Rosarito is one of the places that everybody from California used to go down to Rosarito for the weekend.
Okay.
And I shouldn't do this. Any concern, though, because a lot of people are no longer, I would no longer go down the main highway.
I would probably never go back to Mexico. I would go to Baja, Mexico in a heartbeat. That is, there's nobody there. Once you're in these groups, unless you're in a town like Ensenada or something like that, I would not walk around there without having somebody with me that knew the program. But we were so far in 400 miles, we saw five off-road vehicles in the desert together. That was it. So there's nobody out there.
But beautiful area.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I've got a thumbnail here I'd love to show you. I mean, we're doing, sometimes you're doing 75 miles an hour in that sand, and other times you're doing 10, you know.
So that's got to be really thrilling, flying along in the desert.
It's pretty cool.
And past the cactus.
It is.
And any wildlife out there?
You see cattle. Other than that, no, pretty sparse.
Is it really? And you're along the shore.
Well, you touch the shore. You go from Ensenada, San Felipe, and then the first day was to San Felipe, which is on the Bay of Cortez. The second day is up in the
up in the hills,
high desert.
Said, yeah.
And then
the
third day, you will come back to the Pacific side,
mm-hmm.
and then go back to Ensenada, and then on up into San Diego.
Yeah. And what's it, if you don't mind my asking, what's a trip like that cost?
The trip, everything is included once you get to San Diego. So that package was $2,200. That's everything. Food, motorcycles, transportation. You wouldn't pay another cent once you got into Mexico unless you drink alcohol, beer, mm-hmm. or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
My sales manager just got back. He did 800 miles in 4 days.
In Baja California.
Yeah. So they started in Ensenada. And then he went to a town just north of Cabo, and he flew back from there.
Oh,
and
I say
they did.
That's a great trip.
Cabo's down at the tip, isn't it?
Yeah, in Baja California.
Yeah. So there. And then the next trip is to Cabo.
Okay.
And that's the one that he took was $3,200. And I think if you do Cabo, everything's included again: food, hotels, everything. And that's. I'm not sure what that one is. That's probably about $4,500.
So basically, you're getting a comfortable bed and a
yep.
good place
Everything's
to stay.
Everything's clean.
How's the food?
Food is great. You order off the menu.
Really? Mexican food or food? Regular food?
Well,
like
the midday meals, you're kind of a little trapped because you're somewhere. But they've done this so long that they've know these programs. So you have a regular American breakfast in the morning, buffet breakfast. Noon is, I particularly like Mexican food. For me, it was great. At night, you're going to go to sit down at a restaurant. I had fresh steamers out of the Bay of Cortez. Right. I had shrimp. I had, I forget what I had for dinner, but you could order off the menu.
Well,
you want steak? You order steak.
You know, people here, Mexican food here, if you get down, especially near any water, you can get some
fresh
fish.
Yep.
You know, depending where you are, the shrimp. I mean, the best huachinango, which is red snapper I ever had, was in Veracruz, which is
right.
not in Baja.
Gotcha. Pat, I can tell you, I've been sailing in the Gulf of Mexico, and yep. I've been sailing off of Isla Mujeres, and I've actually had plenty of their seafood. It's real good. It's much different than what you might see here in a Mexican restaurant in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, this is Tex-Mex, usually.
Yeah.
Actually, Cabo is probably the only place in Mexico that I have not been.
Right.
Not gotten that far down.
I haven't either.
Rosarito, which is in Baja, used to be just such a great place. And many of us no longer will go back to Mexico.
Right.
But the food that they ate was certainly not what we used to eat on Mexico and $5 a day. I'm
right.
sure.
No, you're right. It wasn't. It wasn't, but it was a...
That would be a great trip.
Oh, it was totally fun. I don't tell my wife, but if I ever do that again, I'll go to Cabo and have her fly out for 3 or 4 days, and once I get there, then we'll fly back, you know?
Well, once she gets in one of those luxurious resorts, because Cabo has some of the nicest hotels in the world.
My neighbor went all the time. They would every year. They had a timeshare down there, and they would go every year. And the fishing is supposedly fantastic.
I say the fishing is fantastic. You know, there's a famous sailboat race that goes from San Diego all the way to Cabo San Lucas.
Mm. Okay.
And it's called the Baja Haha,
it's
a sailboat race, and just about they must have 1,000 boats that go, depending on. The season and, you know, who's interested and who's not. And it's one big, long party.
Hmm.
Well, listen, if you don't mind, let's take a break to thank some of the people that sponsor this. And
don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-2...
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody out there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
So we're back. We're the sports guys. John Manfreda has joined us.
Good afternoon, everybody.
But we're not going to let him talk. Because
not a word.
We want to hear more.
I'm on probation.
Yeah. John, just like all the sports leagues, you're on pause.
This is true.
Okay. Well, moving along, we got Mo Berger here. Mo Poston, the owner of Berger Motorcycle Shop in Three Bridges on 202.
Mo's a Hunterdon County boy. In fact, Mo was 2 years ahead of me in high school, so he dated all the girls that wouldn't talk to me.
And that was a lot of them.
That was probably all of them.
There was quite a few there.
Mo can tell you I was definitely nerdy in high school, but I became adventurous. And Mo's had some adventures also. One of the cool things about motorcycling is you get to go places and see people and have experiences that you don't ordinarily have in a car. Mo, I'd like to talk about some of your favorite trips. One I know was Upper Wisconsin. Tell us about riding on the Upper Wisconsin Peninsula, Michigan Peninsula.
Well, I was going to say, no.
Upper Michigan Peninsula.
Great. Really fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. My friend Mike Quigley, who was in my class in Hunterdon Central here in Flemington, and we graduated in 67, and ended up threatening each other for years. He's a motorhead, lived in Denver since 75, to do these motorcycle trips. So about 15 years ago, we finally nailed it down and got it done. The first year, Mike took off from Denver and rode up and crossed Lake Michigan on the Badger out of, what's the name of the, it starts with an M, anyway, the town.
Manitowoc,
right.
In fact, what that is, for anyone out there, it's really a fun trip. You get on a
coal.
Some ferry or some boat, right. And you can cross from either Wisconsin to Michigan or Michigan back. And in Michigan, I think you get off at
Ludington. Yeah. So we met there. I took my motorcycle out Route 6 and ended up in Ludington. And Mike came in and we then headed north and worked up along the coast and stopped in Petroskey for the evening, which is a beautiful little town.
What's the peninsula like?
Is that
mostly flat, like sandy?
No, actually, there's some changes in altitude and moving along that coast.
So you went up along Lake Michigan.
We did. Sleeping Bear Dunes, is it up there? And then we crossed over the
Bridge.
The bridge. And into the UP and went to Sault Ste. Marie and watched the locks work.
The famous Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. And we remember who hails from Sault Ste. Marie, don't we, Bill?
Go right ahead, John. Tell us.
Robert Gordon Bobby Orr.
Oh, yeah. Well,
hockey.
But he's
great
from
hockey.
Mo was going through Upper Michigan.
Right.
He just mentioned Sault Ste. Marie, and I could not. Bostonian, that. That's just a name, a city that jumps out because that's where Orr came from.
Yep.
Where did you, when you went into Wisconsin, then what did you do?
Well, actually, then we went to Grand Marais in the UP and then over to Marquette, spent the night. And then we came down through Iron Ore City or something. We went in a cave there on a train and worked our way down. Ultimately, we ended up at Elkhart Lake because Mike is into his Porsches and racing.
I was going to say big racing area.
So we went there, and that's actually where we shook hands and took off. And I had a cousin down in Iowa in Dubuque, and we worked our way back.
Wow,
we don't do any secondary. We don't do any interstates at all. Everything we do is secondary highways, like Route 6 going across the country.
Right.
No more than that. So we're looking for the curves. Last year, I had a bike sent up to Denver, flew out there, and we stayed in the Colorado Mountains around Durango for 3 days, just leaning left or right, Silverton, Ouray,
Telluride. Did you take that ride? I got to ask this, sorry. Sure. Did you ride from Durango to Silverton?
We did.
That is
it's beautiful.
One of the most gorgeous roads ever. And you can take the train.
Well, that's the $1 million highway is what that's called.
It
was built. Guy built it for $1 million back in whatever. And
it is
something
unbelievable.
Now, why is it so beautiful? You're going through the mountains?
The scenery, you're constantly leaning left or right. You're doing 360-degree turns, and it's elevation changes, and it's just gorgeous. You'll see old mines inside of the mountain and stuff like that. It's like going back in time, the early turn of the century or something like that.
And
it's just beautiful.
And Durango's a neat little town.
Yep. It's right on the Animas River.
Actually, for other people, there is a train you can take from Durango to Silverton, and there's actually a very luxurious resort that the only way you can get there is the train. The train stops there.
Yep.
But that is, you know, did you ever get to Telluride when you were on
the did. We went. That's in a box canyon. We went into Telluride.
But unfortunately, Telluride and a lot of those places are so built up now. I was out there back when they were, you know, no hotels.
Right.
There were folk concerts up there, and you'd sleep on the side of the mountain.
Yeah.
But that, had to be one of the best rides.
Oh, it's beautiful. We've done it a few times. That was actually about the second or third time. But it's and then from there, we dropped down to Taos and then Santa Fe and Lubbock, Texas, and Wichita Falls and then on back through Oklahoma. And Mike spun off in Santa Fe and went back to Denver. So we split up somewhere.
So what's it like traveling to a place like Taos Canyon? I've not been to Taos. I have a nephew who lives out there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he's my cousin's grandson.
Okay.
He lived in Taos for about 5 years, and then Telluride, he was skiing after he got out of the Marines, and he was then fixing ski equipment, and now he's an electrician.
Cool. But
what's it like to ride into a town like Taos these days?
Well, it's just, it's neat if you do the old town, which is what we try to do.
Yeah,
if you stay on the peripheral now, it's like any of these towns. Everything's built up, and you got these big high-rise things and casinos and stuff. So we try to get down into town and
you
rent
speak of casinos as if there's some kind of blight on the landscape.
No, my God.
They are bastions of virtue and wisdom.
In this business that I'm in for 50 years now, we would go to Las Vegas probably at least two or three times.
It's a sore subject. I just yesterday had to cancel my flight to Las Vegas next week. So you're hitting a sore spot here.
I'm with
hitting
you.
A nerve.
Well, I have another wonder if you've ever been up in Alaska and the Yukon and Canada. I mean, there would be some beautiful rides in that area too.
There are. I have been to Alaska, but and on Kodiak Island, but not on a motorcycle. One of these days, I'm not going to have a day job. So when I don't have a day job, I will get
like
out of here
of
as
us,
much
right?
as I can. But I haven't made that one yet. We did this past year, this past September, we did the perimeter of the Gaspé Peninsula.
Beautiful place. I've been
it
camping
is.
Up there.
We didn't camp, but we did it on motorcycles, which is great. We went right around the tip of the finger and then back through New Brunswick and Maine and home. And a couple years ago, we went to Portland. We did do interstate to get to Portland because we had to catch that ferry. And at that time,
Nova Scotia.
Yeah, when we were going over to Nova Scotia.
One of my favorite places.
Yep. And we did.
Now, do you usually go with a group?
No.
One or two other guys?
No. It started out for about probably 8 or 10 years. We started about 15 years ago. And Mike, again, he comes east 1 year. I go west the next year. So next year I'm going west. But it was just he and I for about 8 years. My friend that we spent some time in Florida with, Bob, is quite a motorhead. So he rides on our pace. We ride what I call aggressively safe. So we're on the edge, but we don't cross the edge. And then so we added Bob. And then my neighbor, John Martin, started with us 2 years ago. And so he's going to – this year we're going to go out. We're going to go to Denver. We'll head up to South Dakota and then work our way back. Mike will turn around and go back from South Dakota. We'll probably grab Route 2 or something and come back across there. But we did Nova Scotia. We took an all-night ferry. And you get a room, and it's got four bunks in it, modern, clean, and it has a shower, and had a couple beers, and when they leave the dock at 9, you get to
Yarmouth.
You get to Yarmouth, right, at 8 in the morning.
I've made that trip a couple times.
Yep. Motorcycles are always first on. You can get there 2 minutes before it goes. Motorcycles get on the ferries first, and you're first off, so you're out of there. And then we went, did Cape Breton, Halifax, and then Cape Breton, and then over to Pictou. And then we got the ferry over to Prince Edward Island, stayed there for 2 days riding around, and then took the Confederation Bridge back. That's about 8 miles. Brings you back into New Brunswick. And then, is it New Brunswick?
Yep, that's New Brunswick.
Is it New Brunswick?
Right.
And then on through to Maine and then on home again.
Nova Scotia is one of my favorite places. And my wife and I have taken car trips there.
Yep.
And I've always wanted to sail up there. But it's a long ride these days.
It's cold in July up there, Bill.
Actually,
by the way, Bill, since we're talking, and this is the Sports Guy show, and we're talking about Nova Scotia, the name of the local hockey team is
the Voyagers.
The Voyagers.
There you go.
Farm team of
Montreal Canadiens. I actually have their puck sitting proudly on my
desk. I think I've seen that puck
for about 30 years.
Yeah.
But Nova Scotia has some beautiful places like Lunenburg with the Canadian Fisheries Museum and one of the best things I've ever eaten, lobster pie in whiskey and cream sauce.
Wow.
It is amazing.
Okay, Bill, we've got to get back to sports. And
let's talk about motorcycling.
But so, let me ask you, I want to ask one other question, because what happened in our family is when I stopped riding, I ended up giving my bike to our son,
okay,
who now lives in northern Wisconsin, and now both he and his wife ride.
Good.
Not my old Honda. They have newer bikes.
Right.
Do you find that a lot of families bring their kids in to buy their first motorcycle because they've been riding for years?
Not as many as there used to be. When I came here in 1969, Christmas time then, you would have 50, 60 little Honda mini trails lined up, 50 of them. You'd have another 30, 70s lined up. And that was just for the Christmas. That wasn't the rest of your year. Now, if you get four or five for Christmas, is what it is. But you can buy a big screen TV for $1,000. Those little mini bikes now are $1,500 a piece. By the time you get taxed, you got $2,000. You need three of them. Now you need a trailer. Now you need to devote your day to go to Pennsylvania to ride them. So it's just New Jersey is not friendly to providing places for these kids to recreate.
Yeah, that's true.
So you find that the dads who are trying to relive that will bring the kids in, but the kids don't have that same excitement that the dad did when he was 12 years old. So it's a whole different era we live in.
What's your favorite ride here in Hunterdon County?
Well, I would have to say I live in Surgeonsville, so a lot of times I'll either drop down and hit Route 29 and run that north and cross over at Milford and then come down 32 or vice versa if I've got an hour or so to ride. So that area, Sussex, I really like a lot. Hunterdon County is, I mean, you can't really miss, you know, and it's really, if you get out there early in the morning, it's good. I have a farm up in Pennsylvania in Wyalusing, and I'm about maybe 75 miles from the Finger Lakes, so I do quite a bit of riding up in that area, too.
Well, that's a beautiful part of the country.
It is, yeah, it is. So we do a lot of, again, I'm on a secondary road rider, so I'm looking to, you know, go to Watkins Glen the back way or ice cream somewhere that's 100 miles away, Wellsboro, you know, the Grand Canyon, that kind of stuff.
Oh, beautiful out there, Adams County.
Yeah,
once got chased by a bear out there.
Was that right?
Yeah, a long time ago.
You know, there's another, and I got to interrupt again.
Go
another
right
ride. Have you ever gone from Williams in Arizona or Sedona, Arizona, up that winding road and then into Williams and up to the Grand Canyon?
You know, little did we know, folks, we have a preeminent family law lawyer in Pat Schmitz, who's a biker mall.
Yeah.
In another look.
Very impressed, Pat.
I think she was a biker babe before she was a biker mom.
I think she probably started out as a babe.
And
she still qualifies as a babe, and Dave says so.
Too much. I've been out to Sedona in a car, and in fact, my friend Jeff Chappie from White House and I, in 1968, took off for L.A. for a month, and we ended up, he had some relatives in Phoenix, so we did the whole Jerome thing.
Wait a minute. You rode from New Jersey to L.A. on a bike?
In a 66 Corvette.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about a bike trip at that point.
I didn't get into the motorcycle. I actually had a 305 back in that era, but I didn't get into the motorcycle thing here until July of 69.
66 Corvette. I mean, you couldn't pack a shaving kit.
No, you couldn't, but you didn't need it. You need a bottle of whiskey, you need some beer.
There you go.
And don't you wish you had kept that 66?
Oh yeah.
I bet you wish you had
a lot of
that
stuff.
That was a beautiful car.
Even the
what
motor
color?
It was silver, black top, black interior.
Wow.
Big block, 425.
That's what we used to call around here a babe magnet.
Well, that's what happened to all them 1969 chicks that you went to high school with.
There you go.
They're all in my car.
Yeah. Nobody's ever asked, but Dave had a red convertible when I met him.
Wow.
There you go.
There you go.
That's, see?
Well, You know, this is really very cool, but I'm interested in how you get younger people into the sport now. I mean, there's so many people that are focused on video games, or maybe they're focused on something else where we need to get them up off that couch and into your stores and other places where they're actually doing something outdoors that's wonderful.
Well, question I have, and you may have covered it previously, but are there any tracks in New Jersey where kids can go and just ride under some kind of safe, supervised conditions?
There is not, John. That's the problem. There is one small one in South Jersey. It's a couple hundred acres. There are some big players in Pennsylvania, but you're talking probably about 2 hours. There's one place out above Cabela's that's got 22,000 acres. You've got to actually take a GPS in there with you to get out of there.
To get by.
So,
to get out of there, I'm
and
sure.
There's one outside of Scranton. But these are most of these states are friendly to these off-road vehicle machines. New Jersey's not. For years, I've suggested that the state, since I began here, I suggested that the state title these machines. They won't register them. They won't let you use them on the street. But title them. Because I don't know if you stop down this, 2 miles down from my shop, pick something off the road, put it in your truck, and pull in there and trade it in. How do I know who owns this thing? So most states have a title for them, but they now...
I'm surprised that New Jersey doesn't, because they can charge a filing fee to obtain a certificate of title, and I'm shocked that they haven't considered that as a revenue source.
I title my sailboat.
They would have to then account for the monies that they take for these titles.
No, they don't. This is New Jersey. You don't have to account for anything.
You mean to say, because I don't remember, I never had a title for my motorcycle?
You had a street bike. The off-road bikes are off-road. Yeah. And that's where these kids, they couldn't have a street bike anyway.
Right.
But if you want to expose your child to it and you had a place that's a half an hour away, you'd take them for the day. Now you've got to go 2 hours away,
right. And
you're going to have to commit your day or two to it. You know?
God forbid that a young parent do that.
Yeah, right. So it's to me, Jersey is missing a boat with monies. But at that point, they'd have to say, well, look, we've got this state land that we're going to let you do it. And even now, on state land in South Jersey, it's half the size of the state you could ride in. Can't ride on my stuff. That's state land. You know,
that's surprising.
Yeah,
that's very surprising. I know you've been doing business with a training company, Rider Education in New Jersey. Is that right?
Yes, we have.
How long have you had a relationship with them?
I would say at least about 35 years when they came to life.
Now, obviously, their name describes their purpose, but what's it like? What's the experience like of learning how to ride with them?
Back in our time, you didn't have this, so you either made it or you didn't. It's like learning to ride your bicycle when you were a kid. You know, you're going to fall. But with these outfits, you can go there and pay your money. You can now buy your motor vehicle permit there, which they came into place 10, 15 years ago. They supply the motorcycle. They give you a list of what you need. You know, you can borrow a helmet. I wouldn't do that. I would buy one and get fitted up correctly. The gloves you need, over the ankle boots, long pants, long jersey, and it. If you sign up, it's a 3 day. It's 3-part weekend. It's Friday night 5 till 10, and that's classroom. Saturday morning is a few hours of classroom. Then they take you out to the course, which our closest one is Raritan Valley College over here. And then you have Morris County College. There's about six around the country. So you ride in the morning, you have classroom, then you ride a bicycle. All afternoon Saturday and all day Sunday, you're out on the course on motorcycles with these instructors. Sunday afternoon, they'll actually give you the state course. And if you pass it, which you will if you've been on it that long, then they stamp your permit. And Monday morning, you can go get your endorsement on your car license. So it's just very well oiled. They're very professional. If they see that you're over your head, they'll take you to the side and say, look, you're not going to make this one. Go home, settle down. We'll try it again next year or later in the season. So they're very good. We've been servicing their motorcycles at the Morris County College site and the Raritan Valley site in the off season for probably 35 years. They just did 10 or 12 of them here a couple of months ago. We do them in the winter. Because they shut down in October. They start again April 1st.
So, you know, again, I don't remember having to take a driving test on a motorcycle, did we?
In New Jersey, you did. I took mine in 1968, but you just you wrote it down to the Armory here in Flemington, or you went to Quaker Bridge or something like that. And at that time,
must have, I guess. Yeah. I just don't remember. So now, if you take this course, someone can get their license,
right.
And they can actually give them the permit.
Correct. They're licensed now by the state to do everything. You can buy the permit there. That only happened about 5 years ago, but they've been able to give you the certify you to that you've passed that course. So you bypass. The only thing you have to do the next whenever you go for your license is then take your written and your eye test at the MV facility, and then you can go ahead and get in line and get your endorsement. So it's very well done. You can still do it the way we did it. You can buy the permit. They give you, you cannot go take the riding test for 20 days. And then at that point, you can go to the facility, show them that you know how to ride, and buy it. So you don't have to take the course if you're getting back into it. Or
no, but I think that really is a great...
it is.
You know, that would be a good way for anyone... Frankly, anyone starting anything. I mean,
exactly.
John, I'm sure, would think that someone who's starting tennis makes a whole lot of sense to take lessons.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that transcends the activity, certainly any sport such as tennis where, you know, you need to learn specific skills. Or something like motorcycling, where safety is at a premium,
sure.
you've certainly got to be informed, or you could have dire consequences. So yeah, I would certainly agree to that. And so there are safety schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this we have the. You can go online. It's called Rider Education of New Jersey, RENJ, and they go to their website and they'll have a full description of it. The beginning course is $300 or $400, and you sign up for it. If anybody decides to do that out there, they flip the switch on April. They open up the reserves probably now, but they'll start riding April 1st or thereabouts. But don't drag your feet because in about probably by that time they'll be backed up till June. So, you know, make your decision and go do it. But it's
let me ask you a question about motorcycles generally. You know, you hear these... brand names that are revered, I guess, in the field, you know, like Harley and so forth. But a name that's always fascinated me is the Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is one of my clients, who is now deceased, unfortunately, had a large motorcycle collection of about 30 bikes.
Yep.
And I actually wrote into his will what was going to happen in the event he were to pass away, and he had directed his executor to contact a particular dealer in not Miami, but in Florida. I think I'm trying to remember where in Florida, but who was nationally known for dealing with Indian bikes because he had an Indian bike in his collection that went back to the 1930s,
yep.
That won a race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, this bike was worth, probably $100,000 or something.
Right,
it was
right.
Collector's bike.
Sure.
And that was the flagship of his collection.
Mm-hmm.
So what I know there's a new Indian dealer on 22,
right.
On the eastbound side, opposite
the
Harley.
It used to be in Lebanon where Velocity is right now.
Right,
and they built out on 22. And what is the allure with the Indian model? And what's the genesis for the name?
It's American-made machine, and it's got that history. It was the first brand to come to life. And then Harley came around, I think, in...
Oh, I see. So it predated Harley.
I think by 2 years. I think, if I remember correctly, Indian was around in 01, and then Harley came to life in 2000, in 1903. But there
in
was
Milwaukee.
A big competition.
Right. Big,
big,
big
factory.
Big,
yeah.
Big factory in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
In fact, today, there is a museum, a Harley
yes.
museum
yep.
in Milwaukee. That's very interesting,
sure.
by the way.
Sure it is. Yep.
Have you been to that museum?
I haven't. I haven't been to Milwaukee. One of these days, I'm going
to
go do
Bill
that.
Bill and I have been to
we
Milwaukee.
We have been to Milwaukee. We've even been to the spy bar.
We have.
But
a bar devoted to espionage.
But I'm the only one who's been to the Harley Motorcycle Museum. It's actually very interesting. I thought there would be more bikes, but in any event, it was a very interesting
Another
have
spot
you
to
ever,
see in America.
It's not there anymore, but in Vegas, there was a big Harley shop that was famous for its front display, where it had the front end of a Harley bike sticking out of the wall. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I've got pictures of it somewhere.
My thousands of Vegas pictures. But
I think that was
I used to go there every couple of years just to look at some of the stuff they had there.
Sure, yeah, I've seen that. When I'm off duty like that in Vegas or on these trips, it's like people say, "Well, did you go to this one? Did you go to that one?" And last thing I'm probably going to do is go look at motorcycles. But
yeah, right. But somebody told me that
the museums, that's a different deal. That I love.
Somebody told me that is the or was the only one in the country that had that, with the bike coming out of the building.
It
was huge. It was bigger than this room. I mean, it was a big, beautiful display that was right off the strip. I mean, it was on the strip, but the piece with the bike sticking out was on the corner there.
I remember.
Was a kind of a historic landmark.
Yeah, that's all. It's good. That's all good stuff. I think it's a very, for the first, 20 years or so until the Honda kind of came in with theirs, they got you going, the nice people on a Honda kind of thing. So that really brought a lot of people out onto two wheels. And then the next step of it was when Harley came to, when they got their machines in, for the masses, I'll say. You didn't have to be a mechanic to have a motorcycle like the BSAs and the Triumphs and my era. And then you had the Harleys, which you did have to know how to deal with them. But by the 1980s, when they sorted that all out and got these engines where it was for the masses, that was the next step. So I think the whole thing, as people came through, like my age, you came through that Honda thing. And then if you were, if you weren't in a business like me, you'd go on and into the Harleys and try that for a while and then go try something else. And now so many people, like your friend, they have multiple motorcycles. You go to their house or they come in, I say, "What do you got?" "Well, I got this, I got that, I got this, I got that, I got this, I got that," the problem that we have with a lot of that stuff now is that the insurance companies now you have to fully insure every one of them, and you're one person. You're going to ride one of them at a time. And that's an asset for me. I mean, I buy that machine in Denver.
Insurance companies have accountants and lawyers.
They do. They do, in fact.
Well, they.
Same thing with cars.
Yeah.
Although you don't have to, if you're not driving a car, you don't have to, license it, and you can get some special insurance.
As we know here as lawyers, that's a very, very bad practice. People sometimes will, if they have a car, and we run into it a lot with our estate practice, and they garage the car for the time being until they can figure out what to do with it, and it's very dangerous, because if somebody steals that car and goes on a joyride and kills somebody, the estate is responsible for that. So we always tell people not to drop, on any vehicle, motorcycle, car, boat. You never want to drop that liability insurance, because if somebody steals it, they don't consider the theft to be an intervening superseding action that would relieve you of responsibility, on the theory that it was foreseeable. You should have known somebody could steal it and somebody could unintentionally kill someone or injure someone. Just a small piece of the value added that our sports guys listeners get every week on this show in the commercial law area, matrimonial area, and estate and gift tax area.
And not only do we tell you to get up off that couch, we tell you the legal issues that are involved once you do. We've got 2 minutes left, Mo, I was going to ask a question.
Let me just say, how often do you find someone who comes in to buy a motorcycle, and then next step, I can't tell you how many clients I've had that when I ask them about all of their vehicles, they happen to have just bought a motorcycle about 6 months or a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
One way to be getting yourself out of the marriage.
That's true. It's either that or the convertible.
I've watched it for years.
it's a lot of times the first guy will come and say, how much is my bike worth? And I say, well, what are you talking about, so-and-so, you know? Well, I got to, I'm getting married. Bike's got to go. And the 5 years later or 10 years later, he's back in. So he's looking around. I said, I haven't seen you in about 10 years. I just got divorced. I'm going to buy a motorcycle.
I'm coming around again, and I need another babe magnet.
Clockwork.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mo, we've talked a lot about bikes, and I'm interested because everything now is electronically driven.
Yep.
Where's the technology on motorcycles going in the last couple of minutes?
Yeah, personally, I can't fathom seeing a big bike going down the street quiet without hearing
exactly.
The typical vroom vroom. So that's a great question, Bill.
That's the only kind I ask.
It's going to go electric. That's where it will end up. I think part of the whole thing, too, with the young people, and I get it, is the green. You know, they're your combustion engine. You're using fuel. You're using fossil fuel. It's not like a car or a truck or something like that. But I think the whole generation now is leaning towards green, and I think that's the electric is the future.
That's interesting. We've had a great guest today, folks. Mo Poston of Berger's Cycle Shop and here in Three Bridges. Hope folks stop in there. It's a fascinating place to go to, and you can learn to ride there. Mo will take care of you personally. Thanks again for coming in, Mo.
Thank you so much, and I'll see you when I do.
See you around.
Okay.
Very good.
Well, thank you. I don't know why we're not getting cut off, so I guess we can talk for a couple more minutes. Usually, we automatically cut off at 6 o'clock. Somehow, this doesn't seem to be working unless my watch is wrong. But I guess it'll go to rewind, or else we'll rewind. So, sports-wise, I guess we're going to be watching basketball with no crowds, watching...
speaking of the family law, Samantha, I hear there's a lot of wives out there laughing hysterically at the situation right now where there's no sports on TV, basically, aside from hockey, I guess.
No, but even the NHL.
The NHL suspended play?
They're on pause.
Yeah, they're on pause. Okay.
Well, and one of the things...
And baseball is going to certainly be delayed.
And one of the things, and I was really appreciative of Mark Cuban, who we all know owns the Dallas Mavericks, and one of the things that he said is he's going to do something because he's recognizing all of these people who work hourly. And just think of all of the people now.
Oh, there's a huge economic impact to all of this. The vendors who sell hot dogs,
right.
The T-shirts that get sold, the parking... attendance, on and on. There's no question.
Who work hourly. And in any event, I was appreciative of the fact that, you know, here's a guy who wouldn't have to be concerned, but is concerned for all of those guys who he's not paying, but he knows are paid hourly. So I guess the one thing about this is hopefully everybody will try to get together and be nicer and figure out some way that...
well, that's the point. Right now, Pat, nobody's getting together. This is absolutely done the opposite, which is to encourage separation and non-contact.
I mean, get together...
socially.
Not socially. Get together in philosophy. And,
time.
We've had some real tough times. We all know what happened after 9/11. And
yeah, well, sometimes an event like this will galvanize society, but, you know, 9/11 galvanized us in a patriotic sense. The problem here is that you are having discrimination against senior people who are viewed as greater threats to the health
risk.
And safety of the public. So,
or greater risk in being out in the public. I can tell you that we've seen some pretty ugly things where people are suddenly taking out their anger on people of Asian descent or background. We're seeing also a lot of very good things. We're seeing people beginning to band together and say to themselves, you know, we're going to get through this. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to do this the right way. Remember, we're all Americans. We all need to pull together. Yeah, regardless
one more
of our
thing
views.
The Chinese did wrong that is hurting us, right?
Well, it's not
so
the Chinese.
It's galvanizing
it's their
us maybe a little bit against the Chinese.
It's their government, not the people. So
well, with that, we're not going to get into a political discussion, guys. If you know any elderly people in your neighborhood, check up on them. You know, go to the grocery store for them. Do something. That's
preferably by email.
Go to the grocery store by email. Okay. Bye, guys. We'll see you next week. And do check the chamber website because everything has been postponed or delayed. And, you know, I think almost every meeting that I am involved in has now been delayed. And so I think that's going to be across the board. Schools, check Hunterdon. I haven't heard Hunterdon. I know that Hopewell Township schools are closed on Monday. And, you know, let's all pull together. Bye-bye.